It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR and online at www.wrir.org. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
That this really is the correct person, and this is their debt. And so it's using the legal rules and the legal principles, and it's not foolproof, but most of the time... I win because they have not provided the correct support to the local lawyer.
Consumer law attorney Charles Crumbine explains how to defend against a credit card collection simply by making them prove it. And during this week's News You Can Use, you'll learn about notario fraud committed by dishonest immigration consultants. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 218, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM Richmond Independent Radio and online at www.wrir.org and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. What do ACLU of Virginia Director Claire Gastaniaga, Consumer Law Attorney Dale Pittman, and Equality Virginia Director James Parrish all have in common? They've all appeared on WRIR within the past 6 months on this show. No other radio station in Richmond can make that claim. No other radio station offers WRIR's variety of underrepresented news, views, and music. If you like what you hear and want to continue hearing it, please call 622-9747 to make your gift or donate online at www.wrir.org to keep Law for the Rest of Us on Radio for the Rest of Us. Thank you. And now, this week's News You Can Use. Don't become a victim of dishonest immigration consultants, often known as notarios. Immigration consultants, notaries public, and notarios cannot represent you in the immigration process. These people, especially notaries, prey on immigrants often from the same ethnic community as the notarios themselves. Notarios will take your money and your dreams. Many non-citizens find out that they will never get their green card or other immigration benefits because an unqualified immigration consultant or notario, unlawfully working as an immigration lawyer, destroyed their dreams. Only a licensed lawyer or accredited representative is authorized and qualified to assist with an immigration case or green card application. Unlike consultants, immigration lawyers have completed extensive education and training before being licensed to represent clients. You can check whether an immigration lawyer is in good standing and licensed by contacting the Virginia State Bar. You also can check to see if the immigration lawyer has been suspended or expelled from practice before the Immigration Court, the Board of Immigration Appeals, or BIA, or the Immigration Service. Accredited representatives who are not licensed lawyers but can provide limited assistance in immigration matters must work for a recognized organization and be authorized by the BIA. Only recognized organizations are allowed to help with immigration matters. These organizations must either provide their services for free or must only charge a small fee for their services. Ask to see a copy of the decision from the BIA granting official recognition to the organization. It is against the law for notaries public to provide immigration advice. Even filling out forms or a green card application is something that only a properly licensed immigration lawyer or accredited representatives should do. Lawyers from other countries who are not licensed in the U.S. also are not authorized by law to provide immigration services within the U.S. Notarios are not lawyers. They are also not valid accredited representatives approved by the U.S. government. Often they use the term notario publico to advertise their services in the Hispanic community. That title is not recognized in the U.S. as it is in some Latin American countries. For more information, go to www.stopnotariofraud.org. With this week's news you can use,
I'm Marty Wegbright, host of the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. Legal education is legal empowerment and an essential part of the struggle for fairness, equality, and justice. Since 2005, WRIR has made programs like the Legal Aid Radio Show possible so you can hear what nobody else will broadcast. Whether it's unrepresented news, views, or music, WRIR is the only outlet for cultural diversity in Richmond, and you, our listeners, make it possible. Call 622-9747 to make your gift, or donate online at www.wrir.org to keep Law for the Rest of Us on Radio for the Rest of Us. Thank you.
Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here at the law offices of Charles Crumbine of Crumbine and Associates across the street from Willow Lawn Shopping Center, and we'll be talking to Charles today about credit card collection defense. Welcome to the show, Charles.
Thank you so much.
Well, now, most people would assume that if they are being sued over a credit card, that they might not have a defense. You're here to tell us why that is not the case. What is the defense to a credit card collections case?
Well, in civil matters, sort of like criminal matters, somebody's got to prove their case. You don't just say, I think you did it, and you've got to say, okay, I'm guilty. And the same thing sort of happens in a credit card case. There's one company, I don't need to mention their name, and they always show up with the correct evidence and a witness, and they win. I can't defend against them. They're organized. But the vast majority of credit cards, a lawsuit is brought in a way that you can defend on the legal rules. So in order to win a credit card case, you got to have a lawyer. He's representing a corporation. Corporations can't practice law. They got to come to court with documents and a witness to say that those documents are about that person that we've sued. These are the real documents of this corporation. Can't just be anybody off the street or the maid from the corporation. It's got to be somebody, a special person. And then that person has to be able to answer questions about the documents. It's not so simple. Well, most credit card companies, the first thing they do before it's sent to court is they write it off. They just take their tax reduction and move on. And they don't provide all the written evidence. And they certainly don't provide a witness to come to Richmond, Virginia from Minot, South Dakota, or New York City, or wherever, to explain to a judge why that this really is the correct person and this is their debt. And so it's using the legal rules and the legal principles, and it's not foolproof, but most of the time I win because they have not provided the correct support to the local lawyer.
So why are the lawyers bringing these cases when they don't have the evidence in their office? They're probably not going to be able to get the evidence. And even if they get the evidence, it's sitting in their file. The lawyer needs a witness. And you said that for the most part, they can't get a witness. So why are they bringing these cases and how are they winning them?
Well, a lawyer has a duty under the lawyer rules, the Virginia bar rules, to not bring a case unless he has pretty good reason to believe that he can win. Well, the credit card statements are a prima facie case that this person owes the money. Now, if they have a prima facie case, the debtor, the person who used the credit card, has the right to say, well, wait a minute, let's use all the rules, proper evidence, show me that I really owe the money. The way the actual amount is calculated is very, very complicated. So a credit card company can give you 30 days notice and change the way the interest or the debt is calculated. Well, you're entitled to say, why do I owe that amount, not some other amount? 99%, maybe it's 98, of people don't show up. So the lawyer gets a default judgment. Well, now he's won. Now he goes about collecting. Some people he can collect from and some he can't. So the lawyer has a right to bring the lawsuit. He's got a good case. And you've got a right to say, wait a minute, let's go through the evidence carefully. And can you do that? And it turns out most of the time, not always, the lawyer representing the credit card company can't do that. And that's the trick, as it were, that I'm pulling.
So are you saying that the lawyer needs to be prepared to have essentially the entire account history in court with a witness who can testify that, yes, this is the entire account history, these are all of the monthly billing statements, these are all of the changes that we made, these are all of the charges that we imposed, these are all the payments, you add up the pluses, you subtract the minuses, and this is what's left at the end. Is that basically what, in your view, they have to present?
That's my view. But the person who really decides what the lawyer has to have is called a judge. And the judge says that's sufficient evidence, that's not sufficient evidence. Now, the judges can't make up their own rules, but they have some leeway in deciding what is competent evidence. This has changed in the last 10 years. 10 years ago, judges didn't put up with objections to the competency of credit card evidence. But they've learned in the last 10 years, maybe it's 12 years, maybe it's 8, that credit card companies are big companies and they make lots and lots of mistakes and they do many outrageous things. So now a question that says, hey, show me how this was calculated, and the judge says, okay, I'd like to listen to hear your answer. And where's your witness? And there's no witness. All of a sudden, the proposing lawyer says, think I'll take a non-suit and I'll come back another day. And that's sort of a win.
Now, over the past 8, 10, 12 years, I'm sure you've noticed the other trend that's happened with credit card debt, which is the debt buyer. Would you tell a listening audience what a debt buyer is and what people should do if they're contacted by or even sued by a debt buyer?
Well, the first thing the debt buyer needs to prove to you, and not on the telephone, is that they're entitled to make this request or demand on behalf of the credit card company that used to be the owner of the debt. And so, for example, if a debt buyer, somebody that bought the bill from the credit card company, has to prove in court is that they have a valid right to make this demand. They've got to have an assignment and proof that they're the only person in the world entitled to collect this debt. Well, it takes more evidence. And frequently, the credit card company was in a hurry, the debt buyer's in a hurry, they don't have that evidence. And again, they just go away. So the first thing you ask if it's XYZ collection company is, prove to me in writing that you have a right to collect this. And they'll hem and haw. And most of the time, they can. They're the right people, but they can't prove it. It takes the right documents, which they don't have.
And what document would they need, or documents would they need, and what witness would they need in order to show that they are the right people, that they're the only people in the world who have the right to collect this particular debt from this particular debtor?
They have to have a valid assignment. One page of legal mumbo-jumbo. But then they have to have an authorized person or employee of the credit card company that says, yes, I work for XYZ credit card company, and I have the authority, because I'm an employee of the company, or I was an employee of the company, to assign this to so-and-so. And frequently what you'll find is they sold it to one company, who sold it to another company, who sold it to a third company. Well, now the debt buyer who shows up in court has got to have maybe three witnesses to prove that you're really entitled to say, judge, got to pay me, not somebody else. It would be grossly unfair for somebody to be paying on a judgment and then find out that, well, got to pay somebody else. So it's a really valid question. Why are you the only person to whom I should pay?
So when you are trying one of these cases, do you bring your client to court, even if it's a first court appearance and you're just setting it for trial? Or do you tell your client, stay away, let them prove it, I'll defend you?
I have to do this in a way that people can afford this. So what I do is I send them to that first court appearance, tell them to set the trial. They'll tell the judge and the other lawyer that they're going to have a lawyer defending them. They pick a trial date. I give my client the days I can't be in court, and there aren't many of those. And they set a trial. Now then the lawyer representing the credit card company files what's called a bill of particulars. I help my client write an answer. I sign the answer. And then what I find is the week of, the day before the trial, it all goes away, and the opposing lawyer on behalf of the credit card company files a non-suit. That's typically what happens. I've never had a case except for one company, whose name, again, I won't mention, actually produce a witness from the credit card company or the required witnesses for the proof of the assignment.
And what if someone doesn't have a lawyer, doesn't have a Charles Crumbine in their corner? I gather they should go to court. What if the judge asks them the question, even at that first hearing, well, do you owe the money? Which happens quite frequently in general district court where these cases are brought. What do you advise the person to say?
Well, Your Honor, I don't really know. These credit cards are complicated kinds of debts, and I may owe some of the money, maybe not, but maybe not this amount of money, and we need the right evidence to convince you that they have the right amount of money that I owe. And that requires records, witnesses, maybe other evidence. Pretty good answer. Now that's, so I tell my client, when you go to set the trial, say, I don't understand all this stuff. Mr. Crumbine, my lawyer will help you answer that question. And now they've avoided the answering it. And my answer is, well, maybe we owe, maybe we don't owe. Have you got any evidence that you can get to second base?
Now, one of the things that some of the judges in some jurisdictions in Virginia, I believe in Roanoke area, possibly in Northern Virginia, and I know they're considering it in the Richmond area, are considering what are called best practices for these type of cases, particular debt buyer cases, evidence that the judges are going to require the plaintiffs in these cases to bring, even if there's nobody there for the defendant at all. The defendant simply fails to show up. And the plaintiff is, in the way it works now, going to win by default. Can you comment on these best practices and what do you think they ought to be? What should the plaintiff be producing, even if there is nobody there for the defendant, neither a lawyer nor the defendant himself or herself?
Well, I think it needs to be more than just a statement or a group of statements from a credit card company, because it could be anybody. Maybe it's that person, maybe it's not. So let's say you serve somebody and their name is Jones, Sam Jones. Well, you need to know that the person you've served at that address, that their Social Security number, that they really used that credit card. That can be difficult to prove. You've got lots of little things. I don't know how you write up best practices for this because, quite frankly, I guess I could represent credit card companies, but I don't. I represent people who may or may not owe this money, and for a whole variety of reasons, or the amount may easily be wrong. Credit card companies' computers, they make a lot of mistakes. I don't know how you, what do, have an affidavit that says that it's been calculated correctly? Well, they're just going to pencil whip all of them and say, yeah, of course we did. So I think one of the standards is going to have to be, from my point of view, is an affidavit by the lawyer, where the lawyer puts his reputation, his law, his license online, that it's done correctly, that he's investigated more than just cursorily, that it's correct. We've got the correct defendant, and he's investigated. And that's difficult for the lawyer to say. How does he know that the assignment was signed by somebody who is authorized to do that? Well, he needs to investigate. He needs to know that. Maybe he needs to file that. So there's lots of little things that need to be considered, and how you write best practices, I don't know.
Okay. And I guess the last question is, when you talk about those assignments, I've seen a few of them, and they seem to be not that this particular account was assigned, but a whole group of them, dozens, hundreds, maybe sometimes even thousands of them were assigned. Do you think that these credit card companies even have documentation that would show that, you know, Joe Jones' individual credit card account was in that huge bill of sale that may have involved dozens or hundreds or thousands of accounts sold from one company to another?
The documents I typically see are an assignment where the purchaser's agent or bookkeeper says, this was assigned to my company or my boss. This is almost worthless. I don't see documents where an employee of the credit card company signed it, because they don't want to be bothered. The typical credit card debt is sold for between 7 and 15 cents of the face value. The credit card company's getting whatever money they can, and the rest of it's your problem. Well, your problem is not a legal solution, not something that should be turned into a judgment, and certainly not a judgment by default. But it happens every day in America.
Well, thank you very much. We have been talking with Charles Crumbine at the law offices of Crumbine & Associates about credit card collection defense and how to basically make them prove it or make them go away. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
I'm Marty Wegbright, host of the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. Remember when radio used to be real people spinning real records? Remember when news and talk programs used to be insightful and relevant? We at WRIR do too. WRIR DJs hand select the music they play each week. WRIR also features locally produced news and talk covering local, national, and international stories. We are Richmond Independent Radio, radio for the rest of us, and you, our listeners, make it possible. Call 622-9747 to make your gift or donate online at www.wrir.org. Thank you.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio show ever broadcast is now available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Women's injuries, utility complaints, how to handle your own protective order. You won't be informed about these issues anywhere other than on this radio station, WRIR. If you want to continue hearing law you need to know to avoid getting ripped off, please call 622-9747 to make your gift or donate online at www.wrir.org to keep law for the rest of us on radio for the rest of us. Other than the Code of Virginia, your lease is the most important source of a tenant's legal rights and responsibilities. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when landlord-tenant attorney Elizabeth Godwin-Jones talks about understanding your lease in a rebroadcast of a show originally heard on May 2nd, 2012. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegberg.